What's up, everybody? It's Megan here with the Student Loan Planner Podcast. Thanks for joining in, and I am substituting for Travis today. I'm looking forward to it. We are going to do a question and answer style conversation again this week. So I know we did a grab bag of questions last week from our voicemail. We're going to do it again with questions that we had pouring in on all of our media channels because there was some pretty big news last week that came out. We have been waiting and waiting and waiting, and the online consolidation and income-driven applications have been shut down. And we've talked multiple times about how, yeah, you could do a paper application to apply for these things if you need to, but they hadn't been processing them. So it was a really frustrating, like, limbo period where people literally couldn't do much of anything. They have turned those applications on as of a couple days ago. So there are some things that I think people should know. There are some very good questions that I saw rolling in that I'm happy to answer widespread because I feel like they could be relevant to just about anybody. There may be some conflicting answers today compared to what we had chatted about last week because we didn't know that this was going to happen this past week. So we've got a little more clarity. One other thing I want to mention is there were a lot of articles that came out last week as well. I would say probably clickbait style articles that came out about how forgiveness or the cancellation of debt, the Biden administration can move forward with student loan forgiveness. A federal judge rules. That's one of the headlines that I saw. And reading through the article, basically what's happened is there was a lawsuit that came about that actually I think I wrote about in our newsletter probably about a month ago now that a few states had brought about. There was Alabama, Arkansas, Florida, Georgia, Missouri, North Dakota, and Ohio teamed up and said, hey, this new debt cancellation effort that Biden is trying is illegal. And they filed suit for it. And this past week, what happened was a Georgia judge decided that it basically their suit lacked standing. I think what they're saying is Biden's plan, the forgiveness plan that he had proposed, which is kind of the backup plan for SAVE, was that it was going to be most harmful to student loan servicer MOHELA, which MOHELA is in Missouri. So they pretty much deferred this to Missouri to fight. Georgia said, hey, I'm bowing out. I don't want to be part of this anymore. So that's basically what's happened. Nothing else has really changed. This lawsuit is still going forward. You know, we've still got to figure out what the scope of the debt cancellation or the forgiveness is, which that hearing is still coming up. There's one October 24th that we're going to learn some information from on how widespread this debt cancellation, like pause, is with the Department of Education. So stay tuned. We will keep you guys posted. Travis is great about digesting and articulating the political side of this. With that being said, let's jump into our questions because, oh boy, we got a lot. And I've got some questions from Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, TikTok, Facebook. Might be some of your questions if you were posting questions on any of these channels. Let's jump straight into it. And just a little bit of background again, the online applications for the consolidation and the income-driven repayment, those processes were completely turned off on the website. You couldn't apply for either one of those things as of late. And it was really frustrating because people also were being asked to recertify income. People are aware that the SAVE plan is not counting towards PSLF. It's in forbearance, but it's not counting towards PSLF. So people weren't able to switch to plans like IBR to make it eligible. So there's been a lot of frustration because people have literally not been able to move or do things with their loans that they might have needed to or wanted to do. And that's what a lot of these questions are stemming from, where they've turned those applications back on. And I think since it had been such a big deal that those were shut off for so long, I think we've got some like general questions, like just kind of general confusion questions, but also like questions about, am I even supposed to be doing anything right now? So let's jump into it. These first couple questions come from Instagram. Should I submit an IDR recertification if I haven't received a notice that I need to, if it will increase my payment? Who needs to recertify? So this is a good question because if you have not received notice that you need to update your income from your student loan servicer, you're not required to. And you probably don't want to because naturally, your income over time will go up. the last time you've updated your income, your income may have been a lot less than it is now. So like this person is asking, they already know it's going to increase their payment. So should they be recertifying their payment or their IDR plan? And I think the answer is no here, unless you're being asked specifically to do so. Next question. Already submitted a paper upload for MOHELA for income recertification. Do we have to resubmit our information, or will they process what they've already received or what's already been submitted? This is a great question because a lot of people did submit these paper applications, which were just kind of being thrown into the abyss. It seemed like they weren't getting processed. And so what I would suggest here is I would go ahead and do the online application. If you haven't received any correspondence, it can't hurt because the income information you used maybe a month ago is going to be the same as it is now. And so if you were recertifying because you needed to drop your payment, you want to go ahead and try to get them to get this processed as soon as possible. And they're probably going to get to the online applications faster because those are processed by computers versus the paper applications that may be processed more manually. So I'd say go ahead, go for it. Go ahead and resubmit. It couldn't hurt. The paper application might show up again later and get processed, but it should generate the same result because if you recently submitted this information, the information you submit now should be pretty much the same. Next question. In our newsletter, Travis said something that's worth clarifying. The question is, what do you mean by you would have to consider giving up the buyback option if you decide to recertify? Wouldn't you still be able to buy back months? So let me back up and explain what Travis said in the newsletter. He was talking about how if you recertify or if you were to switch repayment plans right now, let's say you're on the save plan and you're pursuing PSLF. The save plan's forbearance right now is not counting towards PSLF. So up until now, really, we didn't have any options but to sit in this forbearance. You could have maybe submitted a paper application to switch to income-based repayment, which is the next best plan that's eligible for PSLF, and you'd be able to continue to bank credit towards PSLF. But those weren't being processed like we were talking about. The fallback was PSLF buyback, which this program allows you to purchase months of forbearance at what the payment should have been when you were in that environment of forbearance, not getting that payment counting. The catch is PSLF buyback you can't do until at the very end of your journey, like when you're applying for the forgiveness, and those forgiveness months plus your months of repayment would get you to 120 months. So what Travis was saying is if you go ahead and apply for IBR now, which you can do now with the online applications on, you're giving up the fact that you're not going to be in forbearance anymore. So you'll be making payments on IBR's payment plan, which the monthly payment is going to be higher than what SAVE was going to be. IBR is based on 15% of discretionary income if you have loans older than 2014. If you have loans 2014 and newer, the payment's based on 10% of discretionary income. With that being said, you'd be entering repayment. So that's a good thing for PSLF purposes because you're getting payments to qualify, but you're forfeiting the ability to do the PSLF buyback for those months. Why Travis said that is we don't know exactly how the PSLF buyback is going to shake out because not a lot of people have gone through it yet. But maybe, you know, if SAVE ends up sticking around, maybe you could have bought back those months in forbearance at a cheaper price than you're paying on IBR when you switch. So I hope that makes sense how I'm explaining it. It's basically just saying like you're going ahead and switching to IBR for the known result of, okay, I'm going back into repayment. This is going to be the payment. I know it's going to count towards PSLF and it may be higher than what SAVE's payment was going to be. That's the route you're choosing versus going on, you know, staying in the forbearance and just relying on the PSLF buyback in the future, which could be less if SAVE sticks around, because then the buyback would be the lump sum of those months that you would have paid on the SAVE plan that you were in forbearance versus the 15% on IBR potentially, or even the 10% on IBR with the higher poverty line deduction. So hope that makes sense. I know that was kind of a confusing comment anyways. So next question. I'm really confused on if I should apply for IBR. I've only ever been on repay and then flipped into SAVE, or keep riding this out. What if save goes through and then I have to move again? What if my buyback later is less than IBR? I wish we had the option to move on to pay again or just repay. Moving to IBR worries me. I'm at 104 months out of the 120 months of payments towards PSLF. I worry that I have save right now. What if they decide forbearance does count towards PSLF, but I moved myself off and into IBR, therefore not getting the free month? So basically, this person's just kind of going through this train of thought of, well, what if they do keep save? And then what if they come back and say, all this forbearance does count like it did in the COVID forbearance, which is fair. That could happen. Who knows? You know, maybe it's unlikely. Maybe folks would say it's unlikely, but that's fair. You know, that's also why it has to be up to your risk tolerance and what you prefer right now. If you prefer certainty and knowing that you're going to get months counted towards PSLF right now, then you'd want to switch to IBR, even though the payment's higher, even though we're not sure what the fate of save is going to be. And if save sticks around, maybe you could just reapply for save later. But if you're okay with knowing that, hey, I have this PSLF buyback opportunity that I can lean on, I'm okay with sitting in forbearance with this unknown for exactly what the payment's going to be. I'm okay with sitting in forbearance until we know more. You know, that is maybe a higher risk tolerance person than someone who's more a little more conservative, who wants more certainty. So you just have to decide for yourself what you want to do here. Do you want certainty and go ahead and switch to IBR? Or are you okay with hanging out, waiting this out to see how this unfolds, knowing that we can lean on PSLF buyback in the future? Next question. I literally just consolidated my loans and have applied to save before all of this happened, and I was put in processing forbearance. I have no idea what to do with my loans right now. A lot of folks are actually in this position where they made changes to their student loan plan right before save was shut off. And so you're in this period where the consolidation probably went through or it's about to go through, and your IDR application that you submitted alongside it is not going to get processed. Maybe it is, though. Who knows? We are not sure if those consolidation applications that had the IDR application attached to it are going to work their way through the system and end up getting processed. But what I would suggest is if your loans have already been consolidated and you're on the standard plan, like maybe they kicked you into the standard plan, it doesn't seem like they're processing an income-driven application for you, go ahead and still apply. You can apply for save. Just know you're going to be put into forbearance if you're approved for save while they figure out if they're going to keep save or not. Or you can apply for IBR or one of the other. IBR is really the only option you have to apply for right now. We'll talk a little bit more about that towards the end. But that's what I would do if you're in that position. If you were put in forbearance after your consolidation was completed, that might be a sign that you are on the save plan. So if you have some questions or you're not quite sure what's going on with your loan status or loan situation, it may be worth either a message or an email to the loan servicer or a phone call. I know that stinks because, yeah, you got to sit on hold for a bit, but that might be a great way to just get some clarity. Any updates on the payment tracker supposed to be finished this month? My gosh, guys. I am waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting for this payment tracker to show up. This is going to be Christmas for me when it shows up, because I have so many clients where we're waiting to confirm, where does your payment count stand towards the IDR forgiveness timeline? Because PSLF folks have their payment tracker on the studentaid.gov website. It used to be on Mohila's website, but now it's on studentaid.gov. We don't have anything for our longer term forgiveness folks, which is really frustrating. We can only manually count up those payments. And that's what we do in consultations, is we have this little converter that goes back and manually counts up all your periods of repayment and forbearance that we think could count from the IDR waiver. We're just waiting for confirmation from the Department of Ed to tell us, yeah, that's about what we've got too, or no, that's not what we've got. So we can figure out, you know, what steps we need to take next. So I haven't seen it yet. It seems like they're working on it, though. There's some folks on Reddit that have found a way. There's like a code way to find an estimate of your payment count. You could probably Google that and find it if you wanted to check it out. But the formal tracker is not live yet. They kept saying at the end of September or in the fall. I guess technically October is still fall, but I'm giving you until this month. And then if it's not here by November, Department of Ed, I'm going to be real upset. So we'll be looking out for this together. All right. Next up, if we bail out of SAVE now, is there a possibility that if it's allowed to remain, we won't be able to get back into it? I would say no. If SAVE is going to be allowed to stay, if they keep SAVE, you should be able to apply for it in the future. If it's repealed, you know, of course, no one's going to be able to apply for it. Doesn't seem like folks would get grandfathered into it. So that's my answer for that one. What if you already have 120 payments on PSLF, but are waiting on discharge? Should you switch or stay? Is this affecting those waiting on discharges? So I would say no, you don't need to do anything. If you've already gotten the confirmation that you have 120 qualifying payments towards PSLF, wait. Just wait right now, stay in forbearance or ask the servicer for a forbearance because your forgiveness discharge should be coming very soon. Congratulations. All right, and last one from Instagram, we'll move on to other avenues. I've been waiting for the online consolidation to open up again to complete my double consolidation loophole. I was advised by my student loan planner consultant to complete the final consolidation process online of the two servicers that I previously had consolidated and pick the standard plan. After that completes, to select a different repayment plan. With all the stuff going on, is this still best to proceed this way, to still choose the standard plan? Should I apply for a different plan? So this is for my Parent Plus folks out there who are in the midst of a double consolidation. This application turning back on is a good thing because it is a part of our process. We don't have to rely on the online application, but it makes things a lot easier. So most folks who are doing double consolidation typically will start with two paper consolidation applications to combine loans into two consolidation loans. And then the next step is to consolidate those two consolidation loans together with an online application. So that third consolidation, that last consolidation step, that's where we're using the online application. And the instructions are still the same. Go ahead and still consolidate online if that's the step that you're on. Combine the two consolidation loans. And I haven't tested this out enough yet, but I am assuming that if you tried to choose an income-driven plan in the application, it would probably only show income contingent repayment. Maybe test that out and let me know, because you could always back out if it's only showing you ICR and choose the standard plan. But I'm guessing that the application is not fixed. It's probably still thinking that you're not eligible for an income-driven plan. So if that's the case, you just want to pick the fixed amortized option, the standard plan, let that consolidation process. And once it's done, you would go ahead and apply for the income-driven plan, which you can now do with the online application. All right, let's check out some questions from our followers on Twitter. If you are on SAVE currently and are not going for PSLF, is it best to recertify and apply to stay on SAVE for the time being while we see what happens to SAVE? This is a good question. If you're on SAVE but you're not going towards PSLF, maybe you're on the plan for payment affordability, maybe you're on the plan for longer term forgiveness, or both. If that's the case, I would probably just hang out to see what's going to happen. But you need to know that these months of forbearance may not count towards the longer term forgiveness. They're definitely not counting towards PSLF. It doesn't seem like they would be counting towards the longer term forgiveness either. So that's just something to be aware of. If that concerns you, if time working towards that longer forgiveness timeline is essential to you, then it would probably be best to switch to IBR, income-based repayment, as a fallback option to make sure that your timeline is not affected. Just know that the payment might be higher than what the SAVE plan was going to be. So that's up to you. You know, if it matters a lot that your timing stays as close to the same as possible with what you originally thought your timeline was going to be to forgiveness, then go ahead and switch. But if not, if you're okay with it being delayed by however long, you know, 3, 6, 12 more months, then just stay the course in this forbearance. It's still got 0% interest, so it's not making your situation worse from that perspective where the balance is growing, you know? So up to you. Next up, if we left pay to go to save, are we eligible to switch back to the pay plan? So unfortunately, no. But if you were eligible for pay, depending on when you borrowed, you may be eligible for the new IBR plan. So if you borrowed after July 2014, if that was the first time you ever borrowed a student loan, then you are eligible for new IBR, which is essentially the exact same thing as pay. It's 10% of discretionary income, and it's a 20-year timeline to forgiveness. If you borrowed before July 2014, then you would be able to apply for IBR if SAVE is repealed. So I old IBR is based on 15% of discretionary income, and it has a 25-year timeline to forgiveness. Has student aid stopped using or linking IRS information? I've noticed no. They do still have the IRS linking tool in the application. I don't know if they're automatically using it, though, for recertifications. I have not seen that happening yet, but a lot of people's recertifications have also been pushed anyways. Next up, are they processing PSLF buyback consideration requests? I've been waiting several weeks, and it's the second time I've applied since April. I have seen some requests get processed. More so, I think what's happening is they were waiting on the IDR waiver to be applied because that was going to affect payment counts potentially that just recently ended, like that window of time where they were supposed to be like counting up payments. And I still don't think they're done. They literally sent out PSLF payment counts for a lot of people in this past week, which a lot of them didn't look right. They look too low, but this is a common trend with PSLF payment counting where you'll get multiple payment counts versus just one email with a payment count. You know, that seems kind of annoying. It is annoying to get multiple payment count updates because you don't know which one is the last one. But from what I can tell, the recent updates that just went out are not the last one people are going to get. So patience here is key still. I have seen some folks getting some PSLF buyback requests getting processed, but that's about the extent of it. I haven't seen anybody get the discharge or the cancellation yet. So, to be determined. Next up, are they now allowing recertification of employment? Not sure if I have a way to upload online. So, they have always, and actually, this PSLF employment certification form has remained online. So, you can definitely go and recertify your employment now. I highly recommend, this is for PSLF. I highly recommend doing the online signature request where you put in your employer's email. That goes straight into the application. What it does is, after you sign it, or there's like a box to check to sign, it sends this application straight to your employer for them to electronically sign. It's like a DocuSign thing. And then once they've done that, it gets sent straight to studentaid.gov or the Department of Ed. So that's the best way to do it. You can recertify your employment now. So go ahead and do it if you haven't done it for PSLF in a while. All right, let's jump over to YouTube. Our followers over there have a lot of questions as well. So let's jump through, or not a lot. I think I've got three from YouTube that I consolidated. So number one, if those of us are on SAVE are put back into repay or pay, does the federal poverty line go back to what it was versus the 225% of discretionary income? The answer to that is yes. So if they repeal SAVE and they throw people back onto repay and maybe they bring back pay, the poverty line does go back to 150% of discretionary income versus the 225. That's what makes there be a difference between SAVE and repay and pay, unfortunately. All right, from a recent podcast that I think Travis did, he mentioned that the IDR waiver had been completed. How is that so? I've been waiting for my account since its inception. I consolidated from FFEL to direct consolidation in 2021. Are you saying it's completed and not yet implemented, or are you saying it's completed and implemented? So basically, it's been completed in the sense of the application or like the ability to get access to the IDR waiver if you needed to complete action, like consolidate. For example, there wasn't an application for this. It was really just if you had FFEL loans or if you wanted to consolidate to get your payment counts credited with the highest payment count possible, you had to consolidate by June 30th. That is what I think Travis was alluding to. June 30th was that deadline to get everything completed or everything submitted by. And then by September 1 is when they said they were going to have the results of the IDR waiver. And I have seen folks with PSLF get payment counts reflecting what the IDR waiver did for them. But this person sounds like they're not doing PSLF. Sounds like we're looking at longer term forgiveness. I have not seen the results for longer term forgiveness folks, which is what I mentioned earlier with that payment tracker that I've been waiting on desperately. So I'm with you here. We're waiting still on the payment count results from the IDR waiver to be posted for our longer term forgiveness folks. So hang in there, should be coming soon. I'm with you. I'm frustrated with you. All right, last for YouTube. This has to do with payment caps. If someone has IBR, a monthly payment on IBR, and it's greater than the standard 10-year monthly payment, they won't qualify for a partial financial hardship. So as IBR, that means that the payment being based on the standard 10-year plan, the balance would be paid off within the 10-year period, and there would be nothing left for forgiveness if we were working towards PSLF. The standard plan also qualifies, though, for PSLF, right? If the borrower needs to switch to the standard plan and not IBR for the above reason after SAVE gets repealed, what's the biggest threat? It means that the standard monthly payment is lesser than 15% of AGI. Basically, I think this person is just talking about, hey, what's the worst case scenario if I'm on SAVE right now, which does not have a cap, that your payment can be as high as your income lets it be, and they repeal SAVE, and I'm not eligible for IBR. If that's the case, because IBR has what's called a partial financial hardship requirement. This sounds aggressive, but it means that you have to have a payment calculated lower than what the standard 10-year payment would have been if you entered repayment initially on the standard plan. So think about like your original balance amortized out over 10 years, or what the amortized 10-year payment would be of your balance at the time of you entering the income-driven plan, whichever's higher, whatever number is higher there is what that standard 10-year payment would be. And that dictates what your cap is if you're already approved on the IBR plan. And if you're trying to apply for the IBR plan, the payment calculation has to be lower than that 10-year cap, right? And if it's not, then we're not eligible for IBR. So that is the biggest threat, is if you're not eligible for IBR because your payment is how it generates your payment based on the 15% calculation, if it's higher than what that standard 10-year payment cap is, then we're not going to be able to get on IBR. And if they don't bring back Repay, which Repay also did not have a payment cap or payment like threshold that, had the requirement for eligibility. If they don't bring that back, then we are put in a situation where we may not be eligible for PSLF. Because is there a standard 10-year plan that you can apply for that's eligible for PSLF? Not quite. So this is kind of complicated, but basically, and Travis and I had a big conversation about this a couple weeks ago. In the language, if we have not consolidated our loans, then technically we are eligible for the standard 10-year plan. We could call the servicer and ask for the standard 10-year plan. The standard 10-year plan is technically eligible for PSLF, but you wouldn't want to be on that plan because it pays the loans off within 10 years, which defeats the purpose of getting any loan forgiveness on PSLF, right? So one might think, well, can't I just apply for the standard 10-year plan at any point if I didn't consolidate my loans and I'm not eligible for IBR? My payment's really high on SAVE or on Repay. Can't I just apply for the standard 10-year plan and they amortize my balance over 10 years? And the answer is no. Well, technically, yes, you can, but there's a catch. What they're going to do is they're going to take into account the time that you've already been in repayment. So if you've been on, let's say, SAVE or Repay for 5 years and you're trying to apply for the standard 10-year plan or make the switch to the standard 10-year plan, they'll say, yeah, sure. We'll put you on the standard 10-year plan, but you've already been paying for 5 years. So we're going to take your balance now and amortize it over 5 years that you have left. So that essentially pays off the whole balance before you get to PSLF. And this language is very buried in some of the details of how these plans work. So it wasn't always very obvious how exactly this worked, but that is what we've come to the conclusion of, is if you try to apply for the standard 10-year plan, you're switching from save to standard 10-year, but you've been in repayment for a long time. It's not as simple as just an amortized 10-year repayment calculation. It's not. It's going to subtract the years that you've already been in repayment, and the payment's going to be really high. And it's going to be enough to pay the balance off before you get to PSLF for the rest of the 10 years. So, not really an option. So, that is the worst case scenario. If they don't bring back repay, if they repeal save, and if we don't have a partial financial hardship anymore to be able to be approved for IBR in the first place, then we may not be able to pursue PSLF anymore. So that could be a big problem. And that's where we'd have to really strategize on, is it possible to get our income lower or low enough to where we fall below that partial financial hardship to get on the IBR plan? Because once we're on the IBR plan, the standard 10-year cap, like once we're already approved for the income-driven plan, the cap is the standard 10-year amortization amount, which I know this is so confusing. But if we're on IBR, we've been on IBR, let's say our payments have been $500 for 4 years because we've been in residency for a while, whatever the situation. But then our income has gone up significantly because now we're an attending physician, or we've gotten lots of promotions. And, now our payment is the standard 10-year capped payment. Like that, let's say that calculation is $3,000 a month. Well, on IBR, what'll happen is your payment, you'll recertify and your payment will stop at that payment cap, the 3,000, and they'll send you a letter that says, "Hey, technically you no longer have a partial financial hardship. Your payments based on the standard 10-year plan when you had entered this income-driven plan, it's $3,000 a month." And that's fine because you can stay at that $3,000 a month for the rest of your timeline and it will still get you to PSLF because it's not taking into account your prior years of payments. So the payment isn't inflated a lot. So that's why this is so confusing. I know I'm like thinking, I'm just thinking back on like, how did I explain this? Did I explain it well? I hope this makes sense. If you have questions about payment caps, or if you need to maybe review, your plan A, plan B, plan C, kind of worst case scenario, depending on what happens here coming up, that's what we're here for. So ask your questions, schedule a consultation if you need us. I've got a couple more questions. I've got some from TikTok. If you're not already following us on TikTok, give us a follow there. We're working on it. We're getting more content out there. But here's some questions from followers on that platform. What IDR plans are available right now? Is pay or repay still available? So the answer is no. Pay technically will show up on the IBR or the IDR application if you're recertifying and you're already on pay. So you can recertify pay if you were on pay as of the summer before it sunsetted, but you can't apply for it now as of this recording, which is October 3rd when I'm recording this. Mean Girls Day. But the options that you've got are going to be income-based repayment, income contingent repayment if you have Parent PLUS loans. Otherwise, income contingent repayment was also sunsetted with pay. There is the save plan that you can apply for now, which you'll just be put on to forbearance until we know the fate of that plan. And then there's also an option where you can have the loan servicer select your plan. So it'll say, have my servicer choose the best plan for me. That's an option. Generally, you want to know what the best option for you is. Don't leave it to the servicer. All right, next up, does consolidation affect loan forgiveness? Yes, it does. It used to erase your payment history if you consolidated, if you had any prior payment history. That was really bad. That's why that IDR waiver was such a big deal, because it was allowing all prior payment history to count, even if you had consolidated. So, really great. But going forward, as of September 1, if you consolidate loans, what's going to happen is if you had any payment history on those loans, it'll take the weighted average of that payment history. If you had no payment history, there's nothing to worry about. You're just consolidating, probably for simplicity. But if you did have a lot of payment history, maybe you had different payment history from different schooling environments, it's going to give you the weighted average of that credit. If you had all the same credit, like you had 5 years of credit on every single one of your loans, the weighted average of 5 years on every loan is going to be 5 years. So you should be good there. What reasons would we not want to consolidate for? Reasons you would not want to consolidate at this point would be If you don't need to, like if you do have a lot of payment history and your weighted average history could be lower than what your current payment history is now, that might be a situation. If you are someone who has FFEL loans, let's say commercially held FFEL loans, we don't know what's going to happen with your payment history. Commercially held FFEL loans, there's not guidance on exactly how those are going to play out with payment history after consolidating now. We know for sure that Department of Ed held FFEL loans and Department of Ed held direct loans will give you the weighted average of your payment history, but there's not currently language that tells us what to do if you have that really old FFEL loan that's commercially held. So, like if you're at not one of the four common servicers, you could have commercially held loans. Another way you can check is just by checking your student aid file. All right, last batch of questions is going to be from Facebook, and then we will wrap things up. Do you need to provide a W-2 or a pay stub for recertifying income? What documentation do you need for recertification or for applying for an income-driven plan? So, the application, if you do it online, is going to try to link back to your most recently filed tax return. So that's the easiest way to have it verify income. It's essentially looking at your W-2 or your adjusted gross income on your tax return that you had filed last. If that income is higher than what your current income is, maybe you had a job change or maybe last year you had a big bonus or something, you can choose to use alternative documentation of income. So you can let it link back to the tax return, but then the very next question is going to ask, has your income decreased since that tax return? And you could say yes if that's honestly true. And then it will ask you to submit alternative documentation of income, which could be a pay stub within the past 90 days. All of this would have to be within the past 90 days, but pay stub, bank statement, social security statement, signed statement by you explaining your income. Those are the things that they would ask for. All right, and I think this is the last question, and then we'll wrap it up. Are we trusting the recertification date listed on the website, even if we haven't received any kind of email or website notification that it's time to renew? I liked the MOHELA date of September 2025. So, this is a great question because recertification technically was supposed to start November 1, where people not to say that your anniversary was going to be November 1 for everybody. That's not what I'm saying. More so, like since COVID started, March of 2020, they've postponed recertifications so much. And a lot of people could have fallen at a recertification date, let's say June of this past year, 2024. Well, a lot of stuff was still going on in the student loan system. So they said, hey, we're postponing recertifications until November 1, which just means that if you were within that window at the time, you could have been pushed to as early as November 1, but a lot of people got pushed to later this year, 2024, or even 2025. I've seen 2025 for recertification dates. So, what I would suggest right now is I would go check out your studentaid.gov website, log in, go take a look at your loan details. You can keep going on down the list, looking at loan details, and you can find your IDR recertification date or anniversary date, I think is what they label it as. And it will tell you what month you're supposed to recertify your income or when your payment would change, I would say. And then you would get a notice 30 to 60 days in advance of that. Now, if you haven't gotten notice about recertification and it says that your recertification date or anniversary is in November, I don't know. They could be postponing recertifications again with all of the save madness. So I would just pay really close attention to if you do get correspondence and pay attention to that due date for when you would have to submit anything. If you don't get anything, you will. There will have to be some kind of mass announcement or some kind of correspondence from your servicer. But if you're hesitant, you don't know if you're supposed to recertify, you can wait all the way up until 10 days prior to that anniversary date. That's listed out on the studentaid.gov website. If you wait up to 10 days before the recertification date, that's the last day you can submit income documentation without being kicked off of the income-driven plan for being late by not recertifying income. So if you're waiting and waiting and waiting and you just want to wait until the last minute because you don't want your payment to change if it doesn't have to, you can do that as far out as 10 days before that anniversary date. on your student aid profile says. So I hope that's helpful. I hope they do push recertifications. It sounds, you know, that would be logical at this point with all the craziness going on. I know this could have generated more questions. If you do have questions, ask your consultant if you worked with us before, or if you would like help walking through these things and putting together your game plan, because there's a lot going on and there's a lot of uncertainty. We can come up with our game plans and how to pivot between those game plans. So schedule a one-on-one consultation. Our team is awesome. We are always on the ball with the latest information that's going on, and we'll do our best to advise you on what your next steps should be to help settle your mind and give you a little bit more clarity in this weird environment that we're still in. It has been a pleasure. Thanks for listening in today, and check out our Financially Free Friday episodes if you haven't already. I am the host of those episodes. They come out every Friday, just like this one comes out every Tuesday, and we talk about things in the financial planning space that student loan borrowers are inevitably going to go through or that are part of your financial journey as well. So if you're looking to expand your knowledge from student loans to other financial topics, join me on Fridays. It's a good time chatting with you before the weekend, and then you're back here on Tuesdays with Travis usually. But thanks for having me, letting me join in this conversation, and hopefully give you some clarity on some of the stuff that's going on. We'll continue to keep you posted on what's to come, and have a great rest of your day today.